हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, so now we have the, Bhima's killed Kichika, and the news has gotten around. So then, now it's 2 weeks before the end of the exile. So Duryodhana and them are very worried about finding them. So Duryodhana wants to send out a party again, and his brothers agree in that. But then Drona says, you just won't find them like that. And then Bhishma, then he speaks about how, that there's so much trouble that they've made, they should just give all this up, and that. And so then he will. Then he says, so I will speak for the benefit of the Kurus. What will actually be good for them? What will make the family prosper? Bhishma looked around at the Kuru hall, assembly hall. At its head sat Dhritarashtra, flanked by Vidura, Drona, Kripa, Bahlika, and himself. Right, so he'll be sitting there, and they'll be sitting just next, in the, not as big as his seat, but, good seats there. Duryodhana and his brothers sat to the king's right, along with Karna and Shakuni. Other kings sat in the assembly and all gazed intently at him as he spoke. Although it was well known that he loved the Pandavas dearly, the assembled kings knew he would never be partial. His first thoughts were for the welfare of the entire Kuru race, and he dealt equally with everyone, desiring nothing but their good fortune. Placing his hand on his golden-hilted sword, Bhishma continued, "As far as locating the Pandavas is concerned, I will tell you where to find them. Look for that place where there are no calamities or disasters. Where the pious Yudhishthira dwells, there will be an atmosphere of peace and security. The people will be inclined towards charity and will be liberal, humble, and honest, modest. There, the people will be cheerfully performing their respective duties, attached to piety, truthfulness, and purity. You will hear the Vedic hymns being chanted and see sacrifices being performed. Clouds will shower abundant rains, and the earth will be bearing crops. There will be signs of wealth everywhere, and no one will be miserable. Indeed, that place where Yudhishthira lives will resemble the heavens. Knowing all this, O Kurus, consider what should be done. In my view, we should give up our petty attempts to find them just to send them again to the forest. Let us welcome them back and restore them to their father's kingdom." Right, so one, he's saying, "I'll tell you where to find," and then he tells all these good qualities and all that. So then they'd have to be looking for that. His spies, whether they have that qualification to see that. But he's also indicating as if, why send them to the forest? Bring them back where Yudhishthira lives, then you'll have all these kind of things. Your kingdom will be running perfectly. So that's much more desirable, right, than simply trying to banish them so you can keep their kingdom and just so you can enjoy the position, when in actuality, as kings, that they're supposed to see to the citizens' welfare. Yudhishthira, just by him living there, that's what the effect you'll get. Bhishma sat down, applauded by Drona, Vidura, and Kripa, who himself rose from his seat and said, "What the aged Bhishma has said is undoubtedly correct and meant only for our good. His words are reasonable, truthful, and consistent with scripture. Returning the Pandavas' kingdom is surely the wisest course of action." Looking across at Duryodhana and his brothers, Kripa said, "But if we are not to follow this course, then we had best prepare for war. When these powerful heroes return, they will be burning with energy and ascetic power." Right? So their enthusiasm, and they've been in the forest, and they're not just sitting in the forest, just roasting marshmallows or something like that. They're actually performing austerities, hearing from the Brahmins, going to the holy places. So the piety that they have has increased so much more. They were already the most pious, and you saw that's how he became the emperor of the world. So now they're even more pious. So then naturally, then they will be doing well. Therefore, consider how to expand your own forces seek out your allies and make treaties with them. Build a vast, unassailable army. If you deny the Pandavas their rights, then we face the gravest possible danger. You know, so he's saying, I agree with Bhishma, we should give back, and then we live peacefully. But if you're not going to give back, then you better prepare for war, because, and you better make sure it is here, vast, unassailable, you know, because otherwise, you know, it won't work out. Duryodhana was pensive. Kripa was right. If he did not return the Pandavas' kingdom, there would no doubt be a fight. But he had no intention of returning their kingdom. So that's his point. His point was, send them to the forest, they'll find them, they'll send them to the forest, and that way they'll just keep them in the forest. So he had no intention from the beginning of returning the kingdom. The fight was inevitable, unless they could be discovered first and sent back into exile. Right? So he's thinking, we still have 2 weeks. The Kaurava prince thought carefully. The report about Kichaka had intrigued him. Apparently he had been slain by the 5 Gandharva husbands of a single woman. Right? So he's thinking, wait a minute here. The coincidence with Draupadi and the Pandavas was almost incredible, especially because there were only a handful of men who could have killed Kichaka in hand-to-hand combat: Balaram, Shalya, Karna, and Bhima. It could not have been the first three, because what reason would any of them had for going to Virat and killing Kichaka in secret? He had been beaten to a pulp in the dead of night. That sounded suspiciously like Bhima's handwork, and he would have had to have done it in secret. It added up. Kichaka had violated a woman of 5 husbands and had been slain in a manner that bore Bhima's unmistakable stamp. Right, so he's just using what he's been given is just wait out the 2 weeks when they welcome them back like that, give them back their kingdom, and just move on. Because if he gives back the kingdom, Bhima and all them can't get upset. But if he doesn't, then all that 12 years, 13 years of being disturbed, you know, that will come down on them. As Duryodhana pondered, Susharma, king of the Trigartas, took advantage of the silence and said, O Kurus, if you desire to expand your forces, we can begin to bring Virat under your subjection. Now he is without Kichaka, and his followers should be little trouble. Let us go and take his wealth. Subjugating him, you will increase both your treasury and your army by requisitioning his forces. I will bring my own army to assist too. Too many times have the Trigartas been overpowered by Kichaka. Now we shall avenge ourselves on the Matsyas. So Trigartha's mind, he's making a connection here. He's just seeing an opportunity. Since it's been pointed out, you're going to have to increase your armies. So that means you're going to have men and money. And so the Matsyas always protected themselves nicely because of Kichaka. And he always gives so much trouble to Trigartas, so there must be some connection with the kingdoms there. And so then he's thinking, now that he's gone, we can take advantage and start our, you know, rolling like this. And at the same time, as Duryodhana is thinking, okay, well, maybe there's something here. We're going for the one purpose, but there's a possibility of these other. You know, so maybe. Duryodhana felt that the gods, or perhaps the Danavas, had answered him. Right, because he had before that aspect of the Danavas saying that, you know, we'll take care and see that, you know, this war will happen and we'll take care. So they're already saying there's going to be war. So that means he doesn't have to give back the kingdom, but they're going to help. So he's thinking, oh, maybe the Danavas have worked something out here. You know, spoken through king of Trigartha. If you went to Virat, they might find the Pandavas. If they were not there, then there was no loss, right? Because then they get a kingdom. Like this. He would still gain something by winning over that kingdom. The prince stood up and issued instructions. Susharma has made an excellent suggestion. We should go to the Matsya kingdom immediately. Prepare our army to leave at once. As he has suggested, Susharma will accompany us with his own forces. Duryodhana ordered that they depart the next day. He told Susharma to go ahead with his army and begin by taking away Virat's cattle. Duryodhana would follow with his forces and attack the city. As the other Kuru elders sat in silence, Dhritarashtra gave his approval and preparations were begun. Right? The others saw this because they said all this thing, welcome them back, this is how it could work. And the first suggestion, that they build an army, and that then Duryodhana just takes it. So they just, what can we do? We said what should be done. After Kichika's death, Virat's citizens were afraid. Although Kichika had been cruel, he had also been powerful enough to protect them. Now they had no protector. How long would it be before some aggressive monarch tried to conquer them? The king, desperate to replace his commander, considered Kanka, Vallabha, Tantripala, and Grantika, right? Because he considered them as they themselves which should be great rulers and he should assist. It seemed to him that any of them could lead his army and protect the Matsyas. It was not long before Virat was presented with an opportunity to test his ideas. One morning as he sat in court, a cowherd ran in and exclaimed, "The Trigartas are attacking us and stealing our cows. O king, come quickly to rescue them." The king immediately issued orders for his army to assemble. He called for his armor and weapons and prepared to lead his army. His four sons surrounded him, also ready for battle. In a short time, hundreds of other powerful warrior chiefs assembled in the court. Outside the assembly hall, the vast Matsya army lined the streets, ready to march. Chariots, elephants, horses, and infantry created a clamor that resembled the ocean's roar. Right? It's good. They're all there, they're living there, so they're ready. So at a time you call, then very quickly they can be mobilized. And so these cities, they were actually forts. They were built like forts. The city itself was like a fort, and so the army was there, and from that then they protected. So if anyone attacks the city, then immediately the army's there. But if they attack somewhere else, then the army will get together and go out and march there and then deal. Virat's younger brother, Shatanika, stood by the king's side. The king said, "I have no doubt that Kanka, Vallabha, Tantripala, and Grantika will fight. Give them armor and chariots adorned with flags. I do not think such men, endowed as they are with bodies like mountains and arms like elephants' trunks, will not join the battle." Right? Because they're being attacked, and so they'll naturally come forward to help fight. You know, like all the other, you know, different able-bodied men would be, you know, their foot soldiers or whatever they can do. Virat strode anxiously out of his hall to organize his army, while Shatanika had chariots fetched for the Pandavas. Having the four of them brought before him, Shatanika presented them with armor and weapons and ordered them to fight. Enlivened by the thought of a battle, the Pandavas selected suitable armor and put it on. They mounted chariots and rode out of the city behind the king. The Matsya monarch charged into battle on a massive chariot surrounded by his sons and the Pandavas. So even though he may not be as powerful as Kanika, he was still a proper Kshatriya. You see, he goes out first. And then they're all surrounded by all of them, but it's him going. Even if they surround him, there's somebody in front and on the sides now, but he's going. Right? He's not sitting back and like that and telling people to do stuff. In his burnished armor, adorned with 100 suns and 100 eyes, the king shone like the sun encircled by the major planets. Behind them came 1,000 infuriated elephants, 8,000 chariot fighters, and 60,000 horsemen followed them, holding their weapons aloft and sending out terrible war cries. The entire army seemed like a mass of clouds charging with lightning moving across the earth. The Trigartas were still rounding up Virat's huge herd, right? Because how many, remember how many cows? I can't remember, it's 100,000 or... There was some big number of cows. So they would be out, because when you have the city, it has a certain size. And then from that size of the city, then Manu gives proportions on how much land you have to have outside that, all around, on the four sides. So you can't have two cities next to each other. They have to have the land on four sides, all around. So then... that means that's the area for all the agriculture, that's the area for the cows grazing, all these things like that. So it's quite a big area. The volume of it's actually bigger than the city. So then the cows will be out, and so the Trigartas will go where the cows are and therefore attack. The Trigartas were still rounding up Virat's huge herd as the Matsya army rushed upon them. Quickly abandoning the cows where they would not be harmed, the Trugarta warriors met them at his charge, right? So they don't just leave the cows there or use them as defenses or something like that. They leave the cows where they won't get disturbed in the fight, you know, and the cowherds will be there. They'll take care of the cows. So this was just an excuse to fight with them like that, because you take the cows, then the army will come out. But, you know, I doubt if, you know, one of their men had come up there and was standing there and, you know, making insults and saying like this or stuff, that the whole army would come out, right? So, therefore, then, like this, that was just their trick to get the army out. A fierce battle ensued on the grazing grounds, right? So that means you have the city, and outside, that's where the fight. You don't fight in the city. Then you destroy the city. What's the point? You fight outside in the grazing, you know, ground. And if anything gets dug up and this and that, you know, a couple of weeks and the grass is growing again, you know. You know, maybe your cabbages, you know, you have to wait till next season, but. As the enraged warriors slew one another, the battle resembled the one that had once taken place between the gods and the demons. A thick dust cloud arose from the field, obscuring everything and screening the afternoon sun. Thick showers of arrows whistled through the air, and warriors fell by the thousands. The screaming fighters hacked at one another with their swords and axes. Right, so you're going to have those on the chariots, and that they're going to have, and they're going to have the bows and arrows, so they're going to be shooting like that. Then the foot soldiers are going to be having the axes and swords. They're going to be fighting. So all this is going on at once. It's a whole scene, right? As the blood of slain fighters flowed into the dust on the field, the clouds subsided. Because it's dry, so all the dust is going up. But as they're killing so many thousands of people with all the blood going, then it starts to moisten the earth, and so then the dust stops. Heads adorned with helmets and earrings were rolling on the earth. Well-muscled arms, their gloved hands still clutching weapons, lay on the ground like serpents. Shattered chariots and pieces of armor were strewn everywhere. Vultures descended and tore at the bodies of the dead fighters. Jackals surrounded the battlefield. Right, so it appears vultures are quite quick, you know, that, and jackals are always in the bushes around like that. Susharma, mounted on a gold chariot, came before Virat and bellowed out a challenge. He immediately released 100 powerful arrows that struck Virat's armor and fell to the ground. Roaring like maddened bulls, the two kings circled one another with their weapons. Upraised, they discharged arrows like clouds pouring torrents of rain. Seeing him engaged with the Mutsu king, Susharma's two brothers came to his assistance. With well-aimed arrows, they killed Virat's four horses and his charioteer. They then slew the warriors protecting his sides and near. Susharma leapt from his chariot with his sword held high and rushed towards Virat. With his two brothers, he seized Virat and took him captive. Yudhishthir saw Virat being led away on Susharma's chariot. He quickly went to Bhima and called out, "The Mutsu king has been captured and his army routed. We have lived peacefully in his kingdom for this last year and are indebted to him. Bhima, free Virat and thus repay our debt. We shall then put the Trugartas to flight." Right? Because they've stayed with him for a year very peacefully and all that, and they've been able to live incognito. So then the point comes up is that, you know, how will they repay that? And so this is one very good way to repay like that. So Bhima will free Virat, and then the others will fight with the army. Bhima's eyes glinted at the prospect of a fight. He had been awaiting Yudhishthir's command before engaging in the battle, right? So they went out, but they weren't necessarily taking so much part, you know, that dramatic, aggressive part. They may have been defending themselves and, you know, doing what everybody else is doing, because they're not showing themselves as, you know, their full potential like that. You know, because otherwise, how does a cook, a cowherd, you know, the guy who takes care of the horses in the stable, and then the guy who knows how to roll dice, how are they going to come forward and be, you know, the prominent leaders in the army? He replied, "Behold my prowess. I shall take hold of that huge tree over there like a mace and disperse the entire Trigarta army." Right? Because, yeah, so then So here, Bhima's going to go into battle. And so then, it's one thing, you have guys coming, they have bows and arrows, they have the arrows, like this, you know what to do. But this guy comes along, and he's got a monster tree. You know, like this, when you say monster, we mean, let's say, 15, 20 meters long. You know, or, 50, 60 feet long. He's taken off the leaves. And he's got that in his hand. You got this guy here, and you got this tree this big, and he's running at you, swinging it around like a mace. You know what I'm saying? You know, a little guy like this, and this tree this big, right? That's going to freak people out. Yeah, so when he says disperse the entire army, he means it. He's not just saying that. That's what's going to happen. So then we'll see how the fight unfolds. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.